Ayurveda literally translates into the science of life and how to live. Understanding the rhythms and the patterns of day and night, of seasons, of our body, of our breath, of our digestion, of our hormones. That's what Ayurveda is. It has everything to do with human life, treatment and prevention of diseases, lifestyles, deep circadian science, fertility, childcare, social conduct, you name it.
Welcome to The Lavender Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavender Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. In today's episode, we dive into the wisdom of Ayurveda, learning how to reconnect and rebalance our bodies to their natural cycle and optimal health, as well as how to reset our circadian rhythms and tap into our body's natural healing. Our guest today is Nidhi Pandya. Nidhi is an advanced Ayurvedic practitioner and wellness coach specializing in holistic women's health and longevity. With a dedicated audience of over 300K spanning across continents, she expertly blends ancient Ayurvedic wisdom with modern health insights, covering topics from stress and brain health to the latest wellness trends, delivering clear, science-backed guidance that resonates deeply with audiences worldwide. Before we begin, I'm excited to share that we just launched our 2026 Artist of Life Workbook, our most loved guided journal to help you create your best year in 2026. This all-in-one journal is packed with exercises and templates to help you reflect, set powerful goals, and stay accountable throughout the year so that you can truly design a life you love. You can find it at shop.lavender.com. All right, on to the episode. Hello, Nidhi. Welcome to the podcast. How are you feeling today?
Thank you so much for having me, Eileen. And I feel great. I'm looking forward to this conversation. It's evening time for me, and I usually do everything in the daytime. So I feel like the evening brings a different mood. I'm excited to see how our conversation goes.
Amazing. Okay, let's start with a little bit about your background and your story. So you grew up in an Ayurvedic household. How did that childhood shape the way that you live and teach Ayurveda today?
And I think that shaped everything, you know, that's really the framework for everything that I do today was how I grew up. So I grew up, Eileen, in a joint family, 14 members living in one household. And the patriarch of my family was my grandfather, who was the Ayurvedic healer. And he was this non-imposing, perpetually inspiring man who just passed down wisdom nuggets without giving us advice. Wow. So I want to give you an example of what that might have looked like and how Ayurveda became a part of our daily life without ever feeling like somebody was imposing. So firstly, we got to see his life every day. We got to see how he lived, how he woke up, the oil pulling he did, he massaged his body, all his rituals. And he never spoke about them much. He waited till we became curious. But more than anything, he taught us the rhythms and the cycles of the universe without actually telling us so much. So for example, if we were eating dinner and let's say that I said, hey, you know, why aren't we eating yogurt for dinner or cheese for dinner? And then he would very gently, my mom, guided by him, would tell us, don't you want to eat that in the daytime? You'll digest it better. Now, as a young girl, I'm learning about these ideas that, hey, my digestion fluctuates during the day and from day to night. And lunchtime is when I can digest heavier foods. And cheese and yogurt are probably heavy for me. So I've learned so many little nuggets in this one statement. Or even bio-individuality, Eileen. You know, Ayurveda is very big on bio-individuality. So if you were like 7 children in the house, and I would see that if you were going out, let's just say, to play in the sun, my grandfather, you know, before he said bye to us, he would say, hey, you know, he would say to one of my sisters, you're going out in the sun. You make sure that you're drinking coconut water because your body can respond strongly. And as a young girl, you don't realize, but subconsciously what I was taking in was that everybody's bodies are made differently. We all respond differently to the same stimulus. And then I saw this constantly in people's responses, not only to physical stimulus, but even psychologically, how we behave in the same event. So my entire childhood went learning from my grandfather and the way we kind of, our family structure was laid out. But also as a sensitive girl, I always asked the question, what makes people sick and what makes people tick? So here I was in this, what I say, my playground, my research laboratory, my own family, having this great teacher who was always inspiring. And then at a subconscious level, so much being, you know, thrown at us in the most beautiful way ever. And before I knew it, I always say that I didn't decide to do Ayurveda. I didn't make a choice. Ayurveda chose me. When it invites you and you have that strong calling to study this science of life, that's literally what Ayurveda translates into. It doesn't matter at that point whether it's a good career option, bad career options. Like you get sucked in. It's a deep calling. And then I had it.
Are you the only one in your family that went into this, or were there a lot of Ayurveda people because of your grandfather?
So everybody is a fan, and I would say everybody lives in somewhat of an Ayurvedic manner, especially the women of the family, which means my mom and my two aunts. You know, so three brothers got married to three different women from three different parts of the country, and you have to see how well they've all lived. So they are very big. They follow everything. Everybody else follows, I would say, 60-70% of Ayurveda. But I'm the only person, and my father actually invested in an Ayurveda cancer company, cancer research company. But I would say I was the only one who had this special invitation to just go all in 24/7, every cell of my body.
So you took it full on. And how old were you? Like, is this the first thing that you knew you wanted to do? Like, no other options?
To be honest with you, no, not at all, right? Oh. Because I was like, I was laissez-faire. I was in flow. I just loved observing people and patterns. And psychology was one of the first things that came to me. Mm-hmm. And my family, I always heard constantly, oh, Nidhi, you know, you'll do communications. You'll be so good at communications. I didn't put half a mind to it, Eileen. And that's why I'm saying it got me off guard.
Wow.
You know, as I went into my, you know, late teens, I would say 18, 19, I had more and more of a calling to kind of realize that people present patterns. Everything in the universe works in patterns and rhythms. And human beings are nothing but just really a display of the patterns, trigger patterns, healthy patterns, habit patterns that they carry. And that's how they show up for their lives. And that's how their bodies change, mind change. That's how they build relationships. And then the more I got into that and I got into wellness, I first started with modern nutrition and I didn't find any, like, I was just like, oh my God. I even studied medical science a little bit. I worked for a pharmaceutical company doing their communications. And by the time I was in my very early 20s, at that point, Ayurveda was not even a word. Like, one out of 20 people would maybe have heard of Ayurveda. Yeah. Today in New York, I would say 8 out of 10 people have heard of Ayurveda. But back then, nobody had.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a choice because Ayurveda pulled me in so deep. And when I did, you know, start studying and I went going back to the scriptures and studying from the ancient texts, I found my teacher and studied for 6-7 years. My mom was, even though she follows this, she was like, why are you studying this? Nobody, you can never make a career out of it. Like, nobody will understand it. And I was like, Mom, I don't have a choice. Like, I just want to be soaked in this for every possible minute that I can. Yeah. And then before you know it, right? Like, before I knew it, the world had found Ayurveda. And as a result, you know, my work just grew.
Yes, the timing was perfect. So let's talk about Ayurveda. How would you explain what are the most important things that we should know about ourselves and our bodies through Ayurveda?
So I want to start at the top, Eileen. Ayurveda literally translates into the science of life, right? I want to just introduce this idea that every species on the planet knows how to live. For example, deer know that they wake up and they graze. Nobody tells them that. And nursing mammals will actually pick galactagogue plants. And bears will eat cabbage before they hibernate so that they can have a bowel movement. And animals that bruise themselves identify sulfur-rich soil. Now, human beings, of course, possessed this knowledge. We knew as babies to suckle on a mother's breast without ever having used our mouth before. And somewhere we forgot it. But let's just say that we hadn't forgotten it. And somebody documented how human beings, the science of this human life and how to live, understanding the rhythms and the patterns of day and night, of seasons, of our body, of our breath, of our digestion, of our hormones, and had put it all down in large texts. That's what Ayurveda is. It has everything to do with human life, treatment and prevention of diseases, lifestyles, deep circadian science, fertility, childcare, social conduct, you name it. And I always like to tell people that some of the current modern day trends, health trends, dry brushing, oil pulling, bullet coffee, intermittent fasting, turmeric, ashwagandha, a lot of these have their roots in Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. As well as traditional Chinese medicine, some of them, but they also have their roots deep in Ayurveda. And Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine have some very similar principles. But I would say, because some of the Ayurveda is still very preserved and taught, you know, it has more of the lifestyle aspects as well, which can easily be shared.
Time for a quick break for today's sponsor, Shopify. I've been thinking about what it takes to create something meaningful. It takes both the dreamer and the doer in us. This idea actually inspired the theme of our new 2026 Artist of Life workbook, Balancing Vision with Action, Dreaming with Doing. It's something I've had to learn in my own journey. When I first started building Lavendaire, it felt like I was wearing every single hat, the creator and the one figuring out all the technical details. But then I learned that I didn't need to be good at everything. I just needed to find the support for the parts that weren't meant for me. That's when Shopify came into my life. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of beautiful templates, you can create a store that feels like a true reflection of your work. You can launch email and social campaigns to find the people who genuinely connect with what you're offering. And Shopify brings world-class commerce expertise, managing inventory, handling international shipping, processing returns, and holding all the technical pieces together. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/TLL. Go to shopify.com/TLL. Shopify.com/TLL. Let's talk about our bodies, because you mentioned how everybody is different and you have something called the inner climate method. So why don't you start with telling us about what we should know about our own bodies?
What makes us animate, what makes us living is rhythm. Whether it's our breath, whether it's our heartbeat, whether it's, you know, the blood going from our feet to our head, but everything is this kind of pattern that's happening in our body. Similarly, outside on the planet, the earth rotates, does revolutions around the sun. Everything in the universe that has life, whether it's the vibration of a cell to like larger revolutions around the sun. But these are all things that happen in rhythms and patterns. And similarly, as human beings, we have patterns at several rhythms at several levels, right from the vibration of the cell to like the pattern of childhood, youth, old age, again, you know, it's very rhythmic. And when that goes wrong, we kind of fall into disease. So I just want to kind of start here. But there's another idea, right? That when all patterns go well, for example, when everything on the planet goes well and there's no global warming, what will continue to thrive is the climate. The climate will thrive outside. And when the climate thrives outside, as all the rhythms are in place, life will thrive. For 4.5 billion years on our planet, we didn't have to do much to grow from single cell organisms to these full-blown species. We actually did nothing. But just the climate, the environment was right, and life just continued to thrive. Similarly, our body, inside our body, there are trillions of microorganisms called microbiome. And more scientists are discovering that their life really determines how our life goes, how our organs, our nervous system, our gut. So the climate inside our body becomes very, very important. And the premise is when the climate is right, then you don't have to do much for your health. It just keeps your body will keep working for you, just as the planet kept flourishing by itself. So what is this optimum climate, right? So first we start with what is the optimum climate that human beings need to maintain? And this also is very similar. It comes back Chinese medicine as well. It's the same idea. So the idea is, you know, let's do this together, Eileen, and anybody else who's listening. I want you to just take your palm, cup it a little bit, and exhale into your palm. What did that feel like? Was it cold, hot, warm?
Warm.
Warm. Was it dry or moist?
Moist.
Okay, so warm and moist, you've used these words. I did it.
Okay.
Our blood, do you know, are we warm-blooded, cold-blooded as humans?
Warm-blooded.
So warm. Warm and moist?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, mother's milk, when nursing, I've nursed two daughters, so I know. Mother's milk is warm and moist. Reproductive fluids are warm and moist. They talk about the probiotic environment of our gut. They used to call it flora and fauna. Flora and fauna grow in places that are warm and moist. Our breath is warm and moist. Mother's milk is warm and moist. Our reproductive fluids are warm and moist. Our ejaculate is warm and moist. Our gut environment is warm and moist. What kind of people do we like? You like hot-tempered, cold people, warm people?
Warm people.
Love, gratitude, compassion, warm and moist. Anger is hot. Stress is hot and dry. Anxiety is too dry. Depression is too sluggish.
Mm-hmm.
So warm and moist is where life thrives. And now we can bring this warm and moist. I'm just giving this as a very introductory idea. I, of course, expand upon it in my work and my book, etc. But our entire job, right? It's really where yin and yang meet. The center point. If you're balanced in your yin and yang, you're going to be warm and moist. And if you look at the qualities of the sun and moon, the sun comes, dehydrates, heats and dries the planet. The moon comes and cools and refuels, moisturizes the planet.
I see.
And the center point is warm and moist. So the concept is that our constant work is to go back towards warm and moist. And that's why a lot of traditional diets, they cooked their foods, they kept it warm, they kept it moist, they stay away from the wind, stay away from stagnation, stay away from dampness, stay away from excessive heat, right? It was all coming back to this warm and moist. In fact, the process of fermentation is also bringing warmth and moisture. If you ferment something, you realize it's a multiplication of bacteria, which becomes warm. It's aerobic, there's water droplets. So it's a warm and moist process. So for centuries, people have just basically worked to get back into warm and moist. It's also how we live. You want to live, you want to interact with people in a way that brings warmth and moisture. How you exercise, you don't want to overheat yourself. You don't want to stagnate and do nothing. So everywhere we're chasing this warm and moist, and I have created a systematic method. But then basically, where does bio-individuality come in, right? The truth is, most of us are far away from warm and moist. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have to come back. Some of us have become hot and humid, inflamed. Think about it as this hot and humid climate where there's all these parasites, there's dampness in the gut and heat and anger, strong reactions to the sun, probably skin rashes. And that becomes a particular type of constitution. Let's just say very hot and humid. Or people that have become very hot and dry. Right? Overly. So they may have similar symptoms, but a lot of burning in their body everywhere, very depleted, burned out, mentally, emotionally, also inflamed, but not so puffy, low grade inflammation everywhere. So that could become hot and dry. Or people have become just stagnant, cold and stagnant, depressed, not moving their bodies, just eating excessively, sitting on their couch, cholesterol, plaque in their arteries, high blood pressure, diabetes, because everything in their body is just slowing down. It's become stagnant. So most people end up going to one of these imbalances. And then our journey, so Ayurveda has something called constitutions, and we work on understanding a person's constitution, which is essentially what is the state of their current inner climate. And once you identify somebody's inner climate, then our job is to bring it back to warm and moist. If it's too hot and dry, we'll introduce cooler and more moist elements. Mm-hmm. You know, like coconut, rice, almonds, etc. If it's too stagnant and cold and damp and just depressed, if a person, then we'll introduce warm stimulants. So depending on where you are, what your body's tendencies are, what its own habit patterns are, and then you bring it to the center point of warm and moist.
When you say damp, is that just the extreme of moist? Because moist is good. So it's like too much moisture, it becomes dampness.
think of a stream, right? When it's flowing, like think about a stream early summer, spring, it's flowing. It's so warm and moist in the air. Uh-huh. Now, if it becomes overly hot, and that happens in India, it can become almost marshy, right? There can be bacteria, there can be some moss, there can be some stagnation because there's just so much humidity, it becomes mossy.
Yeah.
The end of summer, it's really dry. Then the stream can just become almost like dry. It's not flowing. Yeah. So you don't want it to be humid, just like a room, right? Eileen, if you and I are sitting in a room, we don't want it to be sticky. We don't want it to be dry. We want it to be just right moist.
Yeah.
Right? We don't want it to be hot. We don't want it to be cold. We want it to be warm. Like in Fahrenheit, you know, most humans like between 68 and 72 degrees Fahrenheit. That's just warm. It's not hot. It's not cold.
Yes.
So we gravitate towards warm and moist. It's like a warm blanket on a cold day. It's like a warm hug.
When you're talking about these climates, it sounds like there's both food eating habits as well as emotional habits that lead to these different constitutions. So maybe give us some examples. Like to me, the heat makes more sense because I understand like eating spicy or being angry all the time. That makes sense. But what about the other ones? Like what makes you cold? What makes you damp?
Let's just say, I also say like when you've gone on the solar side, right? That's what you just described. Like think about it, like we have the possibility. You want to stay, like the earth was so healthy when the sun and the moon had their balance, right? No global warming, sun and moon had their balance, perfect climate. Mm-hmm. But we've become either too solar. Most people have become too solar, which is what you described, very stressed, alcohol. And these are all dehydrating. Even the sun is dehydrating. What we actually think, we say that alcohol is dehydrating. Caffeine is dehydrating. Staying up is dehydrating. Working excessively hard is dehydrating. Working out excessively is dehydrating.
I see. Yep.
Right? So you just like think it's global warming in the body. No wonder inflammation is such a big cause of chronic condition today.
Yep.
Right. And then, of course, you can be solar with like accumulation and toxins. And, you know, that's hot and dry or hot and humid. But then you can also become just cold and stagnant. Right now, I want you to think of a person, you know, that you like somebody grows up without really using their voice. And their coping mechanism becomes food and ice cream and lots of cheese and large amounts of dairy products. Eating very frequently, but not moving their body, becoming sedentary. Basically, you know, really either stagnating by watching excessively TV, couching on their couch. And that leads to just their entire day is also night, very lunar.
Yeah.
And you know, we all know what happens in the night, right? If you sleep the right amount, you wake up feeling refreshed. If you sleep more than you need to, you wake up feeling tired.
Mm-hmm.
Because at night, your body replenishes the fluids. And if you oversleep, everything thickens. People get mucusy. People get puffy. So now their entire day also looks like a night because they're not moving their bodies. They're not stimulated in their minds. They're not warm and sparked and passionate enough. They've kind of lost their hope in a way. These people can get depressed easily as well.
Yeah.
And that sedentary lifestyle can lead to the lunar imbalance. In big cities, it's mostly solar. You will not survive in New York if you are, you know, if you have lunar imbalance, if you're more cold and stagnant, you'll be thrown out of the city because you won't be able to pay a rent, to be honest with you.
Right.
But the problem we see with the modern world today is that everybody has become too solar.
Yes. But I also noticed the lunar issue to me sounds more like the mental health problems and like whether it's addictions or just feel getting distracted, being all day on Netflix or scrolling your phone.
Yes, but also like think of someone like a perfectly happy child, 5-year-old, okay? But he's raised in a household where there's a lot of refined flour and they're eating big tubs of dairy, ice cream, you know, processed foods, a lot of ice cream, a lot of cheese. And just physically, the child cannot move his body because his digestion is slowed down so much.
I see. Yes.
You know, it's like even you and me, right? I mean, think of a day when we've overeaten too much. And no matter how inspired you are with your work, but you can have an afternoon where you're like, oh my God, I'm not moving today, you know?
Yes, yes.
If you are raised like that, and if you don't know better, before life can actually inspire you, before you come into your teen years, which are your warm years and your passionate years, the people who have kind of created these habit patterns, and then they have to work on undoing them when they become self-aware.
Wow. Yeah, you're so right. Sometimes we don't even recognize we have these patterns, whether it's eating patterns or lifestyle patterns, that they've already shaped us yeah. by the time we're like even in our teens. So how do you then help people? Is it first you have to understand where you are, and then how do you begin to change once you recognize your imbalance?
You know, what I spoke about first, right? Like when the rhythms of the planet were in place, then the like global warming didn't happen. The climate stayed right. So rhythms have gone off. Suddenly we'll see it's snowing in spring or it's a really cold day in summer. And human beings have lost their rhythm as well. So the first thing that I do actually with people, which tremendously helps the body to naturally fall in order, is I help them to set their circadian clocks. When you sleep, when you eat, how you design your day. And just by doing that, you start going with the normal tide. What most people don't understand that yes, our body can look same at all times, but the biochemistry is entirely different from like hour to hour. You know, 6 to 10 in the morning is very different from 10 to 2 in the afternoon. And we can go over these times if you'd like. And it's very quick and brief, you know. Our neurochemistry is very different. But if we understand what's happening inside the body and the neurochemicals, what we can do as a result is design our life accordingly. And when we do that, no matter where you started, it will take you closer towards warm and moist. Because if you are a very driven, hyper person, and if you follow the clock, you will automatically start winding down at a certain time. If you are a very sedentary person, but if you follow the clock, you will still learn to be active at a certain time and not eat at a certain time. So the first thing that I do is I reset people's clocks. And Ayurveda understands the circadian rhythms. Like, I think it's one of the first sciences that spoke about it in so much detail way before. Today, the world has gone crazy understanding circadian rhythms.
Tell us about the rhythm. Is it different because certain people tend to wake up earlier, some people tend to wake up later, or is it the same for all humans?
Think for all humans, right, Eileen? Because think about it. Before we had electricity, this is only 100 years ago, is when electricity really invaded our lives. Before that, our ancestors were not like, oh, look, everybody's gone to sleep at 8, but I'm just going to stay up for 4 hours and I'm going to chill because I'm nocturnal. Nobody did that, right? Like people were not lighting their oil lamps and constantly oiling their lamps to just be like, I'm nocturnal. I'm just going to stay up and chill. People didn't do that. Our ancestors slept according to, I mean, all species, right? Like imagine if a tiger decides to say, oh, I'm going to wake up at 5 and stretch my body and do yoga so I can hunt in the day. The tiger wouldn't do that. So we don't have nighttime vision. We're not meant to stay up at night. Our body doesn't support that. But I will tell you what that day looks like. And what I really love is Ayurveda. One of the biggest principles in Ayurveda and other philosophers have spoken about is you look outside in the world to know what's happening inside. As above, so below. As is the macro, such is the micro. Right? So, and we are diurnal mammals, which means we function in the daytime. We have daytime vision. Nighttime, we don't have vision. So, which means that we function with the cycle of the clock. So, let's look at what happens outside. Between the hours of 6 and 10, and it's a great way to remember also. Aline, if you were to walk on grass in the hours of 6 and 10, what would you, barefoot on grass, what would you feel on the grass in the morning?
A little bit of dew, maybe.
A little bit of dew. It's a little wet, right? The earth is just waking up. It's a little sluggish. If you hear the chirping of the birds also, it's like this awakening chirping. Even our body has the same experience of that wetness in the morning. And that's why people have nose boogers or nasal congestion, eye boogers. If you want to go to yoga class in the morning, you cannot show off in the morning because your joints are still fluid and padded. So it's wet outside and it's wet inside. So what does a human being do in the hours between 6 and 10? You want to wake up, firstly. You want to wake up. If the sun is out and if you keep sleeping, your body will become even more stagnant. The sleep will make it more stagnant. So you want to wake up, but you want to move your body at that point in the day. Now, today, scientists are discovering that exercise in the morning yields more. So you want to move, you want to fire it up because it's recovering from that stagnation. So you want to fire it up. But what do you want to eat? If you were to eat a cold smoothie, Eileen, do you think we would support the wet and sluggish gut? Or you think we would actually aggravate the wet and sluggish gut?
Yeah, aggravate it.
we would aggravate it. So the world is eating smoothies in the morning and they feel like, oh, that was great. I didn't feel hungry. Of course, you're not going to feel hungry because before your fire can start, we've like dampened it. It's like springtime, you have a snowstorm in spring, you know? And that's why all traditional cultures ate warm breakfast. You eat a small warm breakfast, your fire is not very out yet. Between the hours of 10 and 2, what happens outside, Eileen, to the sun? It peaks. That's what happens to our body. Our warmest enzymes, our focus, our mindset, our collaborative work, our passion for the world outside, but our digestive enzymes, gastrin, our insulin sensitivity are all at their best in this time. You want to work, get your productive work, collaborative work between 10 and 2, but you also want to eat your biggest meal between the hours of 10 and 2 because your body is the most forgiving and the most ready. Even plants cannot dare to do photosynthesis without the sun being out. As human beings, we're very brave to try eating heavy meals at other times. But this is the time to eat your heaviest meal between 10 and 2. As the sun starts to decline between 2 and 6, as it gets windy outside, even if the temperature has not dropped, but if you step out at 5 o'clock, you'll have more wind because the sun has settled. Our bodies have the same experience. 3-4 o'clock, everybody's like yawning. The wind sets in our body, right? We're stretching, we're yawning because it's what's happening outside is happening inside. It's a great cue. Your body is telling you that the neurotransmitters and hormones are shifting. The body wants to settle down. If you still have day left, you want to drink a peppermint tea. You want to do some deep breathing. You want to maybe do some jumping jacks, but stay away from caffeine because here you are overriding your body's natural cycles. It's okay to do some caffeine before this 3-4 period, but after 3-4 o'clock, your body is desperately trying to wind down. So that between 2 to 6 o'clock, given that, you know, a reasonable 12-hour day, 12-hour night, 6 o'clock is when most people should finish eating their dinner and a light dinner. You know, I mean, some places where like Morocco, for example, where people, it's so hot that they take a siesta in the afternoon and the sun will set at 10 o'clock. It's a different story. But otherwise, you want to finish eating your dinner before it gets dark by 6, 6:30.
Before the sun sets. I see.
And then between 10 and 2 at night, magical repair happens in the body. And Ayurveda talked about it in tremendous detail. And today scientists talk about the magic time between 10 and 2, where your growth hormone surges, your body goes into repair. Everything, your thoughts create debris or thoughts create junk in your nervous system that people can see under a microscope. And that gets cleaned out by your glymphatic system when you're sleeping between 10 and 2. So if we were to just follow this pattern, right? Heavy lunch, light dinner, wake up in the morning, get your body moving, eat warm foods, warm and moist foods. Most traditional foods are warm and moist, cooked, spiced, good fats. Just like live like your grandmother did. And then we can start working our way back to health. And we don't really have to have a fragmented approach for every different organ, every different, you know, system in our body. We can actually trust our body to do the work. In fact, in many blue zones where people lived 100 plus years, they didn't have any crazy formulas like this. People have tried to find their superfoods. People have tried to find that one secret hack. But really, they all just lived like this in a manner that they honored rhythms.
Basically.
They honor their rhythms outside, honor their rhythms inside, and then the body tries to keep moving towards this optimum inner climate.
Yeah. Even thinking of when the sun is out, different parts of the world have different amounts of sun at different times of the year. So should you be living according to the sun in your area?
So it changes slightly, I will tell you, because we have something called an endogenous clock, which is a memory clock, right? So the exogenous clock is dependent on the light your pupils experience. And that is the major cue. But what that does, it creates a body clock for us. So for example, if kids who go to school and if they get served lunch at 2 o'clock every day, they will start feeling hungry at 2 o'clock every day. That's the endogenous clock is trumping. Or if you're jet lagged and if you go to another country, even if it's very sunny there, you may still feel sleepy because your body clock is trumping. And the reason why we have this endogenous clock is so that when seasons change, and if you're in Iceland on a summer solstice, you're still sleeping at night. You're not staying up because your endogenous clock, which reminds you of normal behavior, even when the sun and the moon are out at odd times outside. And it will change slightly, which means that we hibernate a little bit longer every day. Instead of being like bears, we don't hibernate for months together, but we sleep a little longer in the winter months. And if it's a very, very dry, hot summer month, we probably take a nap, a siesta in the afternoon, so we can stay up a little bit later at night. Because if it's summer, ideally your day is divided between like two mini days and nights, because the body gets so quickly depleted in those morning hours. Like if you're in Morocco, and I've been there in the summer.
Is it because of the hot, the heat depletes you because it dries you out?
Yes.
In a way.
Yes. Yes. What the sun is supposed to do the entire day, it does by like 2 o'clock. It's already done by 2 o'clock what it's supposed to do. And that's why people take a siesta in those really hot months. And then you have a second day, you know, so you have literally 2 days in one day, and then you can sleep really late. And, you know, all traditional cultures understood the right way to do this, like all, like they just did, because human beings preserved their instincts. They were not obsessed with information. And they, like the deer and the tigers and the animals that know how to roll their bodies in sulfurous soil if they're bruised, we knew how to live. Then we got obsessed with our external information, and then we lost our wisdom. But yeah, we basically, so it changes slightly from season to season, but not drastically.
At this point, we're so disconnected from our bodies. Even someone listening to what you just said, they'll be like, oh, that's completely different from how I live my life. And my body would never tell me to eat a light dinner because I'm so used to eating heavy dinners or something like that. So how do you advise us to reconnect with our bodies so that we really build that strong trust where we're actually, like, it's telling us the right thing versus the wrong thing because our bodies are confused?
Yeah. And Eileen, that's exactly the framework that I lay out in my book. My book is called, you know, I don't know if you know my book is called Your Body Already Knows. That's the name. And what it does, it lays out a framework. So the first part of that framework is understanding that we are diurnal mammals and there is a clock outside. And if you just even start there, and I tell people, don't do this because I'm giving you a prescription or information. In fact, take nothing like an information. Like one of the things is every piece of information, something you scroll on TikTok, a prescription somebody's given you, goes to the front of your brain, which is very disconnected from your emotional brain. It's your information brain, right? And when something is stored in your information brain, you don't internalize it unless it becomes experience. But when you learn about nature, when you look at patterns of nature and you're connected to those, and you look at how the birds wake up in the morning, and you look at the behavior of the tiger at night, and you're in awe and wonder and fascination. I just tell people, be in fascination with these rhythms outside. Just like look at a flower bloom as the sun peaks outside, you know, those flowers that kind of shut down. Look at behavior of some nocturnal plants and how they behave at night. And just by studying the patterns of the universe outside and creating that awe, you actually, without realizing, you create more sustainable shifts and a deeper understanding of your body. When you're so connected to how animals wake up and sleep, and you think about how your own life and body, you are going to be compelled and not forced. It's just going to invite you to start thinking deeper about your sleep without it feeling like a disciplined, rigid shift. For example, I mean, if it was cold, right? Let's say you and I are sitting and having this conversation and suddenly it becomes really cold. You know, through experience, you're just like, you aren't going to Google, should I put on the heater? I'm feeling cold. Should I put on the heater? Or like, should I put on the fan? You wouldn't ask that question. You know, you put on the, you know, you make it warm, or you put on a blanket, you know, you wear a blanket or a jacket. So you know this, you've had this experience, so you understand it, and it's not an effort. So similarly, when we understand these rhythms and patterns through experience, through the observation of your own nasal congestion in the morning, or your energy lull at 3-4 o'clock, and you look at it through this mindset of universal, of the rhythmic patterns outside, you automatically start to make these shifts. So you look at that, and then I offer this idea of looking at your climate. Even just start noticing, what are your symptoms? If you're feeling acidity, is it feeling hot and slimy in your body? If you just have a rash or an eczema, is it feeling hot and dry? Are you just feeling so much brain fog that you're feeling just that your entire system has become sluggish and humid and dense? Even noticing your symptoms, right? And understanding the climate that your symptoms carry. And then, of course, then following the systematic advice to come back to warm and moist can help. after that. But like, start noticing the climate of your symptoms. Start noticing the climate of your relationships. There'll be certain relationships that you'll meet and you always feel hot and dry. You know, you're always triggered. Some relationships you feel just shut down and frozen. And there's some relationship where you feel so full, your heart opens and you're feeling so warm and moist. So you want to start noticing these patterns in your own life and just start there. And I tell people, don't have an urgency to create shifts. In fact, in my book, I tell people till half the book, don't make a change. Don't make a single change. Just be in awe. Just like be in the understanding. It's like this, right, Eileen? If I have to drive from New York to, let's just say, Toronto, which is about 8 hours away, but if I just put it in the navigation and I hit go, I mean, it's like I'm overwhelmed. I'm like, oh my God, I have to keep driving. I'm just going to quit. But if I put it in the navigation, I look at my journey, I map it out, I take a few breaths, I say, this is where I'll stop, this is where I'll take a turn, this is where I'll spend the night in Boston somewhere half the way. I'm not so overwhelmed with the journey because I have it mapped out in my head. So I tell people, first map it out, be in the awe, be in the understanding and the learning, and then let those changes happen gradually, not urgently.
Even when you begin to make changes, is there a specific area that you think is most impactful to start with? Because it sounds like Ayurveda is many things, just the eating, the emotions, the relationships.
I would say that how you design your meals, have a heavy lunch, have a light dinner. Mm-hmm. And by doing that nighttime, it's not technically a fast because you were never meant to eat after sunset because we didn't have electricity. But by doing that, you're actually also going to give your digestive system a break and your body automatically lightens and your mind lightens. So I would say that if there's one change that you want to make, you start with that, following the circadian rhythm.
In your book, you introduce like a 21-day reset. Can you tell us a little bit about that reset? What's the goal? What does it entail?
So the 21-day reset is introduced after some of these ideas are introduced that we talked about today, the ideas of the inner climate, the idea of the circadian rhythm. And this, the 21-day offers you a chance to start living like this, but not overnight, day by day by day. So every day it asks you to create a new shift in your life. And they're not drastic. They're very small shifts, which are very sustainable. And you keep stacking those practices day after day. So how you eat, what time you eat your dinner would be one day. And then another day maybe has to do with your exercise or when you exercise. A third day could be about your water intake. And I explain these through the lens of the inner climate, you know, that this is what this exercise might do to you, or this is what excessive water intake might do to you. So, and then I ask you to make those shifts with that lens of the inner climate and the circadian science. And then you make those shifts day by day by day. And you give your body a chance to reset its rhythms and the inner climate. And before you know it, and this has happened so many times, people are at the 21st day and people are like, even 8th day, people message me from the 8th day that I'm only on day 8 and these changes don't even seem so big, but they've made such a massive difference. Because the truth is our body wants to be healthy. You just go back to a rhythm. You just go back to supporting its climate. And it will start refueling you. So that's what these 21 days offer. And they're very simple, very sustainable, very easy to do.
Depending on what inner climate you have, are there different recommendations like, time you exercise or like the nuances or?
Not in terms of timing of any exercise, the timing of everybody should exercise in the morning as much as possible. But I offer that if you cannot do it in the morning and if you end up doing it in the evening, how do you do it? What do you choose? How do you counteract the ill effects? I do talk about that.
Okay.
But what is different is maybe somebody whose body is more stagnant and sluggish, for example, can afford a little bit more spice in their food. Somebody who's already very hot and, you know, warm in their body, very, very hot and inflamed, they may not be able to afford a lot of spice. But I tell people, even if you don't know your climate, you still can do the 21 days exactly the way that they're mentioned in the book. And then if something normal gives you a symptom, let's say you're starting to put ginger in your water and you say, oh my God, this felt like burning to me. Now that gives you a hint that you're probably already too hot.
Yeah,
and that's why it's tipping you over. But I tell people, even if you don't know your inner climate, this is where you start. If you were born on planet Earth, fairly balanced, this is how you would live. But if living like this is giving you any symptom, that's indicative, it'll show you what your imbalance is.
So I'm curious, for your personal life, like, do you have any daily or weekly rituals that you absolutely make sure you do that are rooted in Ayurveda?
All of my life is pretty much like this, but there are also rituals. And I talk about that in the book. Oiling is a big part of Ayurveda. We use oil a lot. And oil is, guess what? Warm and moist, right? Because oil, like we see the oils, they feel so warming, even if you don't actually warm them up and they're moist. Now scientists know that oils can support, topical oiling can support the microbiome of your skin.
Okay.
Because the microbiome is lipophilic, which means good microbiome thrives on good fat. So one of the practices, I'll tell you the practices that I do without fail, is tongue scraping. I scrape my tongue.
Every morning or?
Every morning after I brush my teeth. It just takes a few seconds because digestion and the second round of digestion happens when we are sleeping. And there's like, just as we need to have a bowel movement, there's a gunk that makes it to your tongue and coats your tongue. And you just want to clean that out, stimulate your tongue and tell your body that you're ready for a new day. Then I do a nasya, which is nose, you know, certain herbal oil drops in the nose. The nose is the only organ in the body which has no blood-brain barrier.
Goes directly to your...
Goes to your brain. And that's why now they're studying how to administer certain drugs for Alzheimer's and dementia. They're realizing, but Ayurveda realized this a long time ago. And using those nose drops, great practice, not only cleans your ENT region, it actually supports dementia, your cerebral spinal fluid, memory, hair, sleep, all of that. Mm-hmm. So very easy to do. But also body oiling before I exercise or shower. That body oiling, game changer practice.
So full body oiling before exercise or shower? And why is that?
Ideally, before you exercise, ideally. So because what happens is that in the morning, your body has this a little bit of this fire awakening. If you're doing a bonfire, what do you want to do? You want to fuel it. So its body is warming up. And when you put that oil, you're giving a fuel to that fire. You're creating a steadiness in the metabolic activity, right? The brown fat becomes steady in your body. And so you do that, plus it creates lymphatic drainage. It supports the microbiome.
What kind of oil do you use?
So I tell people start with any body oil. Traditionally, it's always sesame-based oils, you know, and now we know that sesame is known to regulate estrogen and progesterone. I'm not surprised. Like this was, I think, the OG HRT, which is hormone replacement therapy. But if you do that sabhyanga, the sesame oil, oiling your body. I suspect people will have much easier menopauses, perimenopause as well. So you massage your body nicely, take 5-7 minutes to do it. You can take 20 minutes if you'd like, but 5-7 minutes is enough. And you massage it well. It's a very loving practice as well. You induce touch, you regulate your nervous system, you promote lymphatic drainage. But also oil has this great ability to penetrate through your pores and go inside and pull toxins out, right? If you have oil sitting on, let's just say like a table, a dirty table, like, or a table that you cannot really see the grime. But if you come back, let's just say, you know, you spilled oil, you come back in a few hours, you will see all the grime that was on the table has almost come to the surface. It becomes yucky, mucky. And that's what oil does. So it pulls. So firstly, you put oil in your body, you go to exercise, and that helps you for recovery as well. It helps you to recover from your exercise really well, protects your joints, serves as the fuel food. You don't need to eat food through your digestive system. Oil becomes the food. Then you go into your shower, and that oil will protect you from the harshness of the water. Water can damage your skin barrier. So it's going to detoxify you, clean you better, protect you from the harshness of the water. And you come out with soft, supple skin, feeling so refreshed and great. And it's not that you become oily and yucky and mucky. And I tell people, look, full disclaimer, your workout clothes will not smell the best after a few days. Okay, they will not. It doesn't smell in the moment. It doesn't smell so much in the moment. But like there's a certain stench that the oil carries after a few days that you'll see it goes into the clothes. Just throw it, like get new clothes. I'm like, just give it a chance to get new clothes, like every few months, every 6 months, you know, replace your workout clothes if that bothers you. And it's worth it. It's really, really worth it. It's a great health insurance, you know, you're saving on your health insurance by doing this practice. So that is a practice. And I tell people, if you don't want to oil your body before you exercise, that's too icky for you, just oil it before you go into the shower. And that's fine too.
And does this also mean you don't really need lotion after a shower?
You'll see that you don't really need lotion. If you do this regularly, initially you might, because your skin may still be dry from a lifetime, but you'll realize that you don't really need lotion. And the water that used to dry you up now is no longer even part of your, you know, you, of course, you still shower and do all of that. You scrub your body, but you realize that the water that could harm you in the past is not even harming you anymore.
Right, right.
water can be very drying. If you ever spend hours in a bathtub or a swimming pool, you realize how dry you feel.
Anything else that you do, your daily, weekly routine?
So these are probably my non-negotiables, but I definitely have my own meditation practice. I will say the summer has been really busy. So instead of 7 days a week, now it's maybe 4 days a week. I have a breath practice. I'm a big believer in the power of breath. There's a lot you can do with your breath by regulating your breath. A lot. You can change your entire body's climate by doing nothing but just manipulation of breath, what we call pranayama.
Wow.
You can heal from just using your breath. So I have a breath practice. And then I like to kind of dull down in the evening. So like to play, you know, even music, by the way, can support certain neurotransmitters in the body. So there are evening ragas. If you even go on Spotify, people can look at RAGA, which is classical compositions. And they actually work directly with your neurotransmitters. You don't have to do anything. But you wind down with those. So your body has an easier time transitioning into the evening. And then a foot massage in the night. Actually, these days more and more, I'm doing a foot massage at night. And putting my legs up against the wall in what yogis call viparit karni, which is lay down, put your legs up against the wall. Helps to regulate your nervous system, lower your blood pressure. And I would say, yeah, so I have a nightly routine, which is smaller than my morning routine. And all day long, I try to maintain breath awareness. I sit with this thermos of hot, like warm water, which is always infused with an herb.
Okay.
And I keep sipping from this, especially during the daytime.
You only drink hot or warm water?
Yeah, I only drink hot or warm water.
What are your go-to herbs for your water?
So it depends on the season. If it's winter, it's like a warming spice, like garum seeds, also known as celery seeds, which are very warming. Sometimes I'll add fennel seeds to that. Sometimes if it's really hot, I'll just put mint leaves. So it depends on the season that I will choose the herbs that I throw into my water.
I see. So are you also like you don't drink ice water or eat cold things sort of person?
It's not that I never, you know, I tell everybody that, listen, keep what you want once in a while, but just you don't want to do it because you were neglectful, right? Like you don't want to just show up at a restaurant and be like, I just had cold water because I was mindless. They gave me cold water. I drank cold water. So I would say that I drink cold beverages less than most people. That's my honest answer. Yes. But listen, I have two teenage daughters, you know, and they're going to want to, you know, they want to go to get their bubble tea and I'll say, okay, please get less ice. Please get less sugar. Still have some ice, but I will take a sip here or there. I wouldn't mind. I don't love ice cream, but maybe once a year I might eat ice cream. At any other time somebody else is eating, I might try one spoon, but I can't do more than that because my body just thrives in that warm and moist, like all our bodies do.
Yes.
But my body really has a strong memory of that. So
that makes total sense. I mean, I also know a little like traditional Chinese medicine, like we don't do ice. I used to love smoothies and making smoothies. And now I'm just like, I can't really have smoothies. I try not to eat salads as much because I want cooked warm foods.
Same.
In Ayurveda, our salad is just not good for most people.
Yeah. And yet we talk about the Greek food, like Greek diet, and they ate salads, right? But what I've noticed is that all traditional cultures that ate some level of raw foods, they always added two elements, warm and moist, oil and spices that were warming.
Okay.
Like whether it's sumac or the garlic or like parsley or something. And then they added either lemon juice or vinegar. So the oil is the moist.
Yes.
The spices is the warm. The vinegar is also warm because it's fermented.
Oh, okay, okay.
Lemon juice is also warm. It would burn your skin.
Oh, okay.
So they always added warm and moist. And you know, when you add warm and moist, you actually kick in metabolic process. So you actually, in a way, without cooking those salads, you start this kind of breakdown. So if you even just cut cucumbers and you keep them for a long time, it'll start fermenting a little bit through this warm and moist association. So if you just put lemon juice and you put olive oil and you cut cucumbers and you keep them on your table for 2 hours and you come back, they've softened drastically.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So it's in the dressings and the way it's prepared that makes it a little bit okay to eat.
Yeah, a little bit more warm and moist. But listen, I don't think any culture was doing a full salad lunch. Like it was a side.
And that's such a huge American thing.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Needy, if there was one final takeaway that you want to leave with our listeners today, something that you want to make sure that they remember out of everything we talked about, or maybe it's something new, what would that be?
I introduced this idea of having a lot of power in your breath, but just know that every inhale makes your body solar, which means it creates, puts your body in action mode, warms everything up, energizes everything. What we also call the sympathetic mode. Go, go, go. Every exhale sets your body, nasal, this is only through the nose. Every exhale sets your body in repair mode, lunar mode, night mode, being. Inhale is doing, exhale is being. Wow. And as human beings today in the 21st century, we are doing. We're sun, solar. And that's why when we have a really busy day and we come back, you sit on the chair, you're going to exhale. You're going to have force and exhale. But if you become mindful of having those long exhalations through the day, through your nose, nobody has to notice them. They're very natural because most of us hold our breaths. We're living on short exhales. If you wear a variable like a whooper or a ring, most people are breathing 14, 16 breaths per minute. If you're stressed, you're breathing 22, 25 breaths per minute. That's very much. Yogis want only 6 breaths a minute because they're doing long exhales. 4 breaths a minute because they're doing long exhales. So there's one thing you can change and you can bring, and if you want to bring your body to regulation, focus on those long exhales. If you're having a really busy day and you want to repair, you want every breath has a chance to repair. And don't miss that chance.
Wow. I love that because it's literally what we do every day. Breath is a part of who we are in our lives. But I love that you made sense of like there's the solar and the lunar. Like all day we are balancing, but we have to also, we can intentionally like fix that balance.
Absolutely. We can intentionally go into exhales and take that opportunity for free in the middle of a conversation while your boss is mad at you, while you're stuck in traffic or your teenager is not listening to you. You still have this breath with you. It never leaves you till you die. It's the last thing. It goes when you go. So when you have it, use it so carefully, use it so mindfully, and use it to your advantage.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Wow, Needy, you're such a gem. Is there anything else that you'd like to share before we leave today?
No, that's it, Eileen. Thank you so much for asking all these lovely questions.
Amazing. Okay, so where can we all find you online?
I post a ton on Instagram, and my Instagram is my_ayurvedic_life. But I also have a website, and that is myfirstnamelastname.com, nidhipandya.com. And everything that I'm doing is posted on there. I work with people one-on-one. I have a nutrition program that's coming up. I have several master classes, but I keep doing something and you'll find my work there and what I'm doing next.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. I learned a lot and I'm inspired to make some of those changes. So thank you
so much, Eileen. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please share your support by leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavenderlifestyle and follow our Instagram @lavenderlifestyle. Sending you so much love. Bye.